This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. It's 40. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Elmo's Wharf, online. SunburyMotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online, sunburymotors.com. And now we bring in the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, always a pleasure. Welcome.
Hey, Steve, I'm having some phone problems.
You're having... Well, hit it on the side.
Hold on, I'm going to try again.
What have I told you over the years with that equipment? Okay, with that equipment, some of it's made in the old Soviet Union. It only understands force. We'll get to Neil in a moment. All right. These things happen. It's no big deal. It's why we have live radio. These things do happen, so we make our adjustments and move on from one thing to the next. Tennessee, by the way, did win the College World Series last night. They beat Texas A&M. Good game in Omaha. That was terrific. It started before the Stanley Cup Final last night. I watched more of the Stanley Cup Final than they did the baseball. But, I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, it was a really good game. I thought it was, for the most, Omaha's a great host. And it was great. So, enjoyed it. Let's see. So while we'll wait for Neil, I can tell you I've gone to some basketball practices. Football's going through the conditioning part still right now. I mean, they're doing that. Football also just finished up its last major visit weekend. And I've seen some of the players, by the way. And yes, I hear Neil on the line. Yes, I can always pick up on certain things. My good friend, to say it's always a pleasure would be an understatement. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, indeed. As always, it is my great pleasure to be here.
All right, so I want to start with the quarterback part of it, because no matter what we talk about with the Steelers, and we haven't talked about it a lot, Russell Wilson, in some ways, this is like a rehabilitation assignment along the way. When you watch the Denver version of Russell Wilson, what do you think actually needs to be rehabbed on him in terms of his game?
With Wilson, and I know Steelers fans have not liked hearing this since it happened, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, but I wouldn't say he needs to improve this as much as he can't do the stuff that they're asking him to do in Denver. I think the results are pretty obvious. If you watch him game to game, don't look at the stats. If you watch him game to game, he made a lot of mistakes. He didn't see plays happening the way they were drawn up. That was the frustration from Sean Payton. He made a lot of mental mistakes. stuff that, you know, go with their record, are not acceptable for a quarterback in the NFL. So they need to, I hate to use the word simplify, but they need to incorporate the things that he can do. And if you look at it in Denver, you're going to ask yourself, well, why didn't Sean Payton do that? Well, because he's Sean Payton, and they signed him for $20 million a year and probably had more sway within a new ownership group than the quarterback did. So I think a lot of what Wilson can do, he can throw the deep ball well, he throws it down the seam well. Have him be able to read a play as it's developing, probably fewer one, you know, just quick one-hit reads. Let him see the play materializing in front of him. And that really means you need a little bit deeper of an offense. That's not something we've seen in Pittsburgh a whole lot lately, to put it mildly. To me, I think you have a good marriage of the skill set of a quarterback from the past with an offensive coordinator who can scheme around that concept from the past. So in a way, it's almost a reclamation project both for Russell Wilson and Arthur Smith. I think in that, they need to run things that don't have as much complexity but are allowed to develop a little bit more to give Wilson the feel that I think he was lacking when he was in Denver, if that makes sense. He didn't have rhythm. He passed on things earlier in plays rather than later, which is, you know, the primary receiver is this. That's where the ball needs to go. He doesn't really operate well like that. I think he's going to get the sense of where the ball needs to go in his mind, and you need to be able to create enough options for him to be able to do that. And to be successful with that, a lot of trust that needs to take place. Probably going to be saying you can't make an omelet without breaking any eggs. He's going to, I think he's going to have a few turnovers and a few, you know, frustrating situations where a play could have been made, but he passed on it for something else. They have to establish that trust, and they're really going to have to kind of let him go. I think that's why they made a thing of saying Russell Wilson's the starter. We brought him in. This is our guy. I think they need to build that up. I think to get the most out of him with a new offense, he's going to have the freedom to do the things that it has worked for him in the past. He had some success here and there in Denver, but not really enough game to game playing within a very rigid structure. He needs to be able to get the ball down the field when those opportunities are there, and he needs to be able to lean on a running game to set up a lot of the movement, a lot of the play action stuff that he's used to running. And I think that's exactly what they're going to do. It's in my mind, it's a great fit. It's a question of how well they can blend together for who they are now versus what they've shown in the past.
Right. So now let's get to the Justin Fields part of it. With the new kickoff rules, it's at least been floated that he might be a part of it. So we'll start with two parts. Number one, let's start with the kickoff rule and your thoughts on it and the idea that maybe Justin Fields is a part of it.
Let's start with the second one first. Whatever reason that came up and the manner in which it was kind of broken to the world, I think might have been taken a little bit more seriously than what they thought. At the same time, though, when you have the space that you're going to have to operate to set blocking up, good open field runners are good open field runners.
That's right.
So while I don't think there's a way in the world Justin Fields is going to go for being a kick returner, I do think you're going to see the teams that want to be the most creative with this having the most success. To a point where, there probably is a bet that I could make on this. I wouldn't mind dropping $100 on there's going to be 3+ kick return touchdowns in week one. It's crazy, I know, but I think it's one of those things that you're going to understand how to run it far better than you're going to understand how to cover it in week one, coming out right away. It's very different. It's unique to this game, obviously. It makes sense for where they want to go as far as limiting, you know, high speed violent contact, and it's not like anything that we have seen at the NFL level. So some people are going to be well ahead of the curve on this, and some people are going to be way behind the curve. We're going to see that quickly within the framework, at least the first couple weeks of the NFL season.
I think
Justin Fields could be effective within that. He's a great open field runner. He has great feet. He's very quick. He sees what's coming at him. In fact, I would even argue a good running quarterback would have success with this because it's very similar to the kinds of stuff that they break consistently. And Fields, for as big as he is, obviously he's fast in a straight line sense. He's not Lamar Jackson, but he's twice as big. He's really, really quick. He's very agile. He's great at eluding defenders in the open field, and that's really what this is going to be. There's a lot more space to work with. They're not going to have as much time to close in around somebody, which is what you do on a kick return. You're staying in a lane until you're breaking in to converge on whoever's carrying the ball. This is going to be much more straight ahead running, and with that, I think somebody like Fields could be effective, just in a theoretical sense. That said, there's absolutely no way he's going to be returning kicks. Fields, oddly
as
enough,
as the backup quarterback, that's right.
They're both in contract years, so they're not going to put themselves into a position to unnecessarily risk injury. Obviously, nobody's talking about Wilson doing this. I just mean Fields, the position that he's in. He's a free agent next year, so he wants the opportunity to throw the ball. He doesn't need to show anybody else that he can run it anymore. I can't imagine he would be on board with it to the point where I don't think it was even serious. I think it was just something they floated as he might be the best open field runner on the team. That's the type of guy you want back returning kicks right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, I completely understand that as to, what the thought process happens. But I think it's at least an interesting – you're right. The kind of runner you want to have back there, that part I completely get, is that's the kind of guy you want to have in terms of the ability to get in the open field. I mean, you'd love, for example, to put Lamar Jackson back there. I mean, he'd be something in that.
Yeah, for the same reasons. You look at how quick he is. I mean, really, it's there's a difference between to the sideline. I jokingly tell a Browns fan friend of mine this, but the Baker Mayfield speed, a guy that can get out of the pocket and can reasonably get you 4, 5, 6 yards angling to the sideline. That's, Baker Mayfield isn't slow, but he's not fast. Lamar Jackson is side to side, all gaps, all distances fast. You get a guy like that in this situation where he has both his left and his right to move, he would be dangerous. In this situation, I think at the same time, I think it's common sense. If Lamar Jackson has 10 yards of runway and you're coming at him straight and he can elude you to his left or his right, he's going to make some guys look stupid. He's going to break some ankles and he's going to make some plays. He absolutely would dominate in this. Now, that's not to say that there are not very shifty, very fast other players that might not have the franchise value that Jackson does, that you don't need to put back there. But at the same time, there is an instinct behind this, and I'm not even sure if it can be defined. But it's athleticism plus vision, creating some type of preternatural anticipation. There's an instinct to running in the open field, and Lamar Jackson might be the best that we've ever seen, at least since like Barry. Since Gale Sayers, these were guys that knew where somebody was going to move before anything would happen, and they could set it up, break at the right time, and make guys miss. Jackson is that level of a runner that in something like this, it'd be fun. I totally get that there's no way they're going to do that, but I would enjoy watching Lamar Jackson in this kind of scenario. In fact, I hope in Madden 25 that's an option that's available. If I could have Lamar Jackson return kicks, maybe that'll actually compel me to play with the Ravens. I'm not sure. We'll see how that goes. But Jackson's a phenomenal runner, and this structure is going to open that up for lower level roster guys that need to do something to make a roster spot. And I think the kick returner is going to be a significant part of this upcoming season. And again, I'll say this throughout training camp and into the preseason, the teams that get this, the teams that can execute this are going to be factors as the season goes on, because it's so different. There really isn't a whole lot to draw from. There are ideas. There are theories. Some will work really well. Some won't at all. I think you're going to see a huge gap between the good ones and the bad ones. And that's going to be the factor in a lot of games this season.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that. It is going to be. What kind of players do you need to cover this? And do you change as to how you block it because of what the alignment happens to be?
That's one of the more convoluted things I think you're going to find. I've talked to a few people involved with special teams at various levels. They'll all give you the confident answer like they know what they're talking about, but it sounds a lot like the same as what they would do before. And it doesn't account for a different spacing. It doesn't account for the fact that blocking can't be the same. It's much more one-on-one. So really, what you're typically looking at is your linebackers, guys that can run with a good amount of speed and plug holes, fill lanes, get in the way until there's the big, you know, kind of violent crash and the bodies fall everywhere. This is a lot more one-on-one. So in a way, it's almost like they're going from, you know, real hard on the blocks, low post play basketball to today's open-ended, hit the three, corner three, transition three, something that's much more spaced out. It's much more one-on-one. They have not ever played special teams like that. So the right fit in my mind would be if you've got, you know, to block, if you've got an offensive lineman that can run to a spot very quickly and get in the way of somebody that's going to be far quicker, be able to get inside their body and move them. You know, in other words, it's either going to be a loss or a touchdown in a lot of ways if you have too many of those guys. You've got to be able to balance it out, and you're still doing all that with the constructs of a 53-man roster. They're still going to value the third-string linebacker, you know, over perhaps the third-string tackle that they need on game day in certain situations. You know, it's going to come down more to offense and defense than it will specifically special teams, minus your core special teams guys. You know, it. What I mean by that is, the advantages I think are going to be much more obvious, and guys are going to be playing in a sense out of position in a way. I would think the guy coming down, they have to break off blocks, straight up blocks, elude them as opposed to overpower them. They're going to have rip, swim, all of those, you know, dips, all of those kinds of moves to be able to get past the guy blocking them, because they're not double teaming. They're not going to have the space to be able to do that. In that, I think it's going to take a different player. They're going to have to be trained differently than what they've done. And the NFL, they don't spend a whole lot of time on special teams gunners. And they don't do this in college at all. So I don't even know. I think some people are going to take to it really well. Some coaches are going to take to it really well. But I think some are going to be absolute disasters as well. And that's going to create some significant plays and games. And we're not really going to understand why until we see it live. Maybe not even in the preseason. We might have to wait till the regular season to really flesh out what coaches want to do. But it's a much more heightened strategic part of the game, I think, than it's been in the past. And as a special teams dork, I think it's going to be fun. I enjoy the strategy that goes into it, why they're doing it, how they're doing it. There's a lot more emphasis now than there's been in the past. And I'm not even sure who's going to be great at it, but I'll bet there's going to be a stark difference between the ones that are doing it the best and the ones that aren't.
I'm glad you brought up the preseason, because the preseason, look, a bunch of different guys play. You know, you're paying, like, you're just wasting money if you're going to a preseason game, unless you're a real diehard in terms of people you want to see. But when it comes to this, can you see teams putting out their best players right away because they need to see how it works in live competition?
That's what I mean, though. It's I'm choosing my words carefully, but NFL coaches have earned the right to allow themselves to think that they know everything.
Right. Yeah.
And I just call it life experience. Very rarely do you know everything about something you've never done before. So I think the humble ones are going to recognize this is way different. They're going to need to see it. And they can look at it in training camp all day long. You wouldn't have preseason games if you honestly felt training camp was the only thing you needed to do. Now, the financial piece of it, I guess, that counts. But you're going to have to put guys in different situations, and you're really going to have to break them down individually. Are you going to put your kick return one team out there right away? Maybe you get them a couple snaps, but a lot of it is going to be mix and match, different guys, and kind of try to isolate them as individual competitors to compile the idea of what they have in front of them, what they need to work on, what worked and what didn't. Mm-hmm. I just think, honestly, in a lot of ways, maybe preseason in particular, I think it's going to be a gong show. There's going to be a lot of crazy stuff to have because there's a lot of things that you can do with this. And I, with all due respect to Danny Smith, for example, Steelers special teams coach, who forgot more football today than I will ever learn in five lifetimes, but there's no way he has a great sense of how this is going to work week one against Atlanta. There's just no way that's possible. And I'll bet he's going to be the first one to say that. They have a lot of ideas, but without being able to execute them in real time, real competition with the real officials on under the stadium light, I don't think they know fully what they're getting into. But I also think Danny Smith is the type that can excel with this sort of thing. Maybe the Steelers are ahead of the curve in that regard. They're not going to truly know that, though, until they've got official uniforms on going up against a live opponent, whether that's preseason or week one, to be honest. I would think the more reps, the better. That's just me.
Well, having you on every week is my choice. That's just me.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm glad you keep calling back.
Yeah, well, believe me, we need you. Thanks so much, my friend. Have a great one. We'll talk next week.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us. Take a break. Matt Cotrillo in the next half hour. Have you and I decided to stay for that?
I am. I will.
All right, well, I'll go with the Unified Front, then I'll stay, too. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the final half hour of the show, being brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Marcus Free in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto Home Life, Business, Boat, Motorcycle, RV have a multitude of insurance needs. They handle them all and do everything they can to save you money. Great pros, great people. Purdy Insurance. Marcus Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. Giancarlo Stanton's agent's about to join us. I don't know if he's there yet or not. Do we have him, Todd?
Sorry about that, Steve. Somebody called when Matt was supposed to call, so now I have to try and get a hold of Matt.
It's one of those days, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Actually, what the call was about was the guy, it's a man from Georgia, asked about the mineral rights under Penn State and if Penn State has those, because apparently they've found lithium with the natural gas, and would Penn State be able to use that?
He didn't know
if you would know that or not, obviously.
Well, they can, if it's their land, they can use it. But you mean the money from it?
Yeah, the money from the mineral rights.
Right. Well, the money from the mineral rights would go to the university, would not go to athletics.
It wasn't actually anything I had thought about.
No, but this is something Jack Ham and I have talked about this. Now, lithium, no, I did not know about lithium, but we've talked about shale, natural gas, and Jack and I have talked about the ability from the shale to get oil on property that is on Penn State land or underneath. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, land goes straight down into perpetuity. It's yours. And Penn State owns the land. If they have the mineral rights to it, which I believe they do, then yeah, they can garner money from it, but it would be for the university, not for athletics. I just can't see Pat Kraft out there with a rig right now trying to take care of it. I just can't see it. It's a great question, though.
It's one of those things that I hadn't really thought about.
No, but Jack and I have talked about that because, I mean, Jack does coal brokerage, so he knows, you know, essentially what is around here, and that certainly would be something that would be possible for the university to take advantage of. Now, the university on its own won't be able to get it out of there. They don't have that kind of capability. They'd have to hire somebody to do it. But yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility when you have that. So, great question, though. Great question. It's the Pat Kraft out there now. Come on, keep digging. Keep drilling. This is great. But, no, it would not benefit athletics. It would benefit the university. But it also takes time to do stuff like that. So we'll get Matt on in a few moments. John Smoltz, by the way, says that analytics people in baseball have backtracked from even pretending to want to keep players healthy and are pushing pitch counts as a shield for criticism. He says, the biggest problem in the game is injuries, and no one seems to want to address it. This just kind of look the other way and say, hey, it's part of the game. There are way too many injuries this year. Way too many injuries. Smoltz says, in reality, the emphasis on pitching velocity and spin rate has put an enormous burden on players' arms, and he is absolutely right about that. You are expected to go out there for your one inning, two innings, and throw as hard as you can and snap off as much as you can. Smoltz said that the reward system is why players are chasing it, and I don't blame them. But the reward system is flawed. You're asking pitchers to throw as hard as they can, spin it as much as they can, and then, oh, by the way, limit what they do when they get near 100 pitches. It's a broke system. It's a broke philosophy. You won't hear anybody talk about it. See, but John's right about it. I've been talking about it for 10 years, but unless there's rules changes, nothing will change because philosophically, they think this is the way to navigate a season. Now, as you know, John Smoltz gets ripped by the analytics community all the time as an analyst. Right? Remember, he pitched as a starter. He pitched as a closer. He had a long career. He knows how to pitch. And you're telling him his business? Because you have data? Really? Like, Game 7 World Series? Pitch for pitch? Toe-to-toe with Morris? Well, the Twins? In a 1-0 game in 10 innings? You're telling that guy what's best for a pitcher? When he was standing on the Metrodome mound in Game 7 and pitching in the biggest moment of his life like it was July? That's the guy you're telling how to pitch? Interesting. Smoltz says he believes front offices are comfortable pushing pitchers to the brink because they know they have the depth to withstand injuries, meaning they no longer worry about players' health and a negative outcome. This is where I give the Phillies a lot of credit. I give the Phillies a ton of credit because the Phillies, Nola, gets you into the seventh inning. Wheeler gets you into the seventh inning. I mean, they are not afraid to let their guys go out there and pitch. And I think that's a big reason why the Phillies have had great success this year. They are not afraid to let their guys pitch into games. It's been a great philosophy. That's why when we had Scott Fransky on, no, was it Scott? It may have been Scott Lauber. And we were talking with him about it. He says, the one concern is, have they given the bullpen guys enough work? Because the starter pitchers have been so good. Ranger Suarez has been off the charts. I mean, all three of those guys could be in the All-Star game. I mean, really. So while teams use pitch counts, do we have Matt?
No, I was just going to say I'm having a hard time getting a hold of him, so.
He's probably out in the yard supervising right now.
Something's not straight.
Knock down those weeds! Let's go! But, Daddy, I'm only 4. That's right, you're not 3 any longer. Let's go! You can hear him now. Right. While he's on a lounge chair with a lemonade. So right now, the same thing is going to happen for the rest of time because this is what they figured out. He told Michael Barr. He said, I have enough arms. They're not ready, but I have enough arms to fulfill a calendar year if some of my guys get hurt and I'm not managing innings. So while teams use pitch counts to keep pitchers from being overtaxed, Smoltz called BS. He believes those limitations are just a cover for the extreme wear and tear teams know they are putting on their players. I would argue that the pitch count has single-handedly hurt the game in the way that we manage it and the way that we have golden rules. Analytics came into the game almost guaranteeing that they would put players in the best place to be successful and keep them healthy. Well, only half of that is true. In other words, put them in the best place to be successful, not be healthy. So you never talk about keeping them healthy because they know that doesn't work. Smoltz called out teams for relinquishing strict caps on pitch totals and more during the postseason, arguing that that showed it was not based in fact. He said Major League Baseball knows there's an issue and will mandate a change among teams sooner rather than later. Smoltz believes the league is just waiting for recent changes to game speed, defensive rules, and base paths to become more normal before they disrupt the game any further. That makes sense. This is one area that won't change until there's a rule change and it's coming. They just can't enforce it right away because they just made 3 great rule changes. And I think all 3 are great. But the starting pitching has been trying to be eliminated by analytics for a long time. Small suggestion would be a link to the availability of the designated hitter only to the portion of the game in which the starting pitcher is still in place. So there's no such thing as dumb things anymore when you want to change the course of action. By the way, we are coming up on the 50th anniversary of... You can do it. Tommy John surgery. Did you know that?
No, because I didn't guess it, but it doesn't surprise me.
It's a we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Tommy John surgery. According to David Sampson of MetalArk Media, teams brought young pitchers in knowing that they had limited chances of a long career in order to chew them their arms for depth in a 162-game season. Because there's now a built-in expectation of Tommy John surgery.
You can find stories of parents opting to have their kids have Tommy John surgery without needing it in high school now. To get it out of the way.
That's ridiculous. You never, never get cut unless you have to be cut.
I don't disagree with what he's saying, but I think it's much more than Major League Baseball, and I think almost all levels of baseball have to come together and figure something out, because this is something that has to be built up from youth. I mean, you're not going to be able to throw these guys into the major leagues or into the minor leagues and expect them to throw like this. And they kind of do the same things to them in college sometimes, where
that's right,
where they, you know, are throwing two and three times in a weekend. So I think it's the sport of baseball itself might have to figure out a way to come together to solve this rather than just the major leagues.
Well, actually, it's got to be the major leagues that solves it, because guess who sets the tone for all the other levels?
Wow.
I mean, do you think some high school guy sat down and said, hey, let's do this, this, and this? They copied it from the major leagues. Right? That's the difference. Right? Everything that's out there is a copycat right now. On, you know, everything. So when the then Washington Redskins ran counter Trey, what did the rest of the NFL do the next season? They ran counter Trey. Now, they didn't have those offenses. Joe Jacoby wasn't in the, and Russ Grimm weren't in the offensive line. So it, for some odd reason, it didn't work as well. But teams were running counter Trey. Right? Bill Walsh brings in the West Coast offense. It works. Everybody starts running the West Coast offense. You know, everything's a copycat, and it's up to the major leagues to set the tone so that the copycats happen to be high schools and colleges and the minor leagues.
It's almost worse in youth baseball. I mean, Little League went to the pitch counts 15 years ago. Little League does a better job of it, but like the perfect game stuff and the ASA, there's very little pitching rules to these things, and that's that's where it's, you know, that's where these kids are getting their arms hurt and having surgery when they're 14, and even reading the draft stuff now, there's three or four pitchers that are supposed to go in the first round that have already had Tommy John.
Right, exactly. Oh, believe me, I broadcast baseball. I get bios on everybody. I know which ones have had Tommy John and which ones haven't. Like, okay. Now, if it's necessary. What bothers me is the statement you had that some people have had, some young people have had the surgery preemptively. No. If you don't have to be cut, don't get cut.
That's a good rule of thumb.
I mean, seriously, if you don't have to be cut, you know,
that's why they're trying the plasma injections and stuff now before they go under the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. Crazy. And believe me, what you said about young people and parents getting a preemptive Tommy John is not unheard of to me. I've heard the same thing you have. And I just sit there and I shake my head like, what are you doing? It's like, okay.
It is mind-boggling. I don't understand the mindset that would allow you to get to that point.
Yeah, I don't understand what the thought process is.
I guess it reinforces it. I don't know.
But then again, I've said this once, I've said it a million times, and I really mean it. Let kids be kids. You can't wait. Every waking hour can't be spent trying to get your kid to the majors, to the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, whatever it may be. Let them have fun. At some point, if they're really talented, it'll all come out. They won't get bypassed. They won't get overlooked. People are looking for talent all over the place. Right? Let kids be kids. Let them enjoy their childhood. Let them enjoy life. Because guess what? When it comes time to be serious, they'll be serious about it. And when it comes time to be serious, they'll be a better rounded person because you allow them to enjoy life. And it can't be all about, okay, we got to do this because what? Right? It's okay. Most parents are awesome. And believe me, these parents love their child. I've got it. But some of this stuff can go too far. And that's one of those that goes too far. You know? I wonder if we get mad on tomorrow's show. Because I'm worried that if he doesn't say something, it's going to be awful for coworkers, Lisa, the kids, because of all that pent-up anger.
It'll be only one time in like the last 3.5 weeks. It'll be much more pent-up anger than just one show. Remember, he was at the beach?
And he was yelling at the kids then about putting sand in their hair, right? Then we had that sad picture of the three of them longingly looking at the beach because he wouldn't let them out after that. It's just, and I think Mark's undergoing Tommy John surgery tomorrow. So, I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, let's see if we can do tomorrow's show.
I will do so.
Yeah. All right. Well, come back, Mark. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070. WKOK, your home of fun.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday. Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai. North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Hi, this is Steve Jones. Join me on Wednesday, August 7th at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the 33rd Annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. Get your four-person scramble team together to support the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. There are loads of prizes, including hole-in-one closest to the flag, longest drive, and more. Call 570-556-4191 to get registered and then join me and Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation Wednesday, August 7th at the 33rd Annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament.